country, and we begin to pray for a healthy monsoon to help alleviate the threat of catastrophic fire in our area. We pray for our country. We pray for those who have been elected or appointed to positions of authority, that they would bring a God-centered focus to their work, adhere to the values of the Constitution, and use common sense in their decision-making. We pray for families, for boys and girls, moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, for babies and unborn babies, that you will bring the family unit closer together. We pray today for all those who have no one to pray for them, the lost and forgotten, wandering souls of the world, that you will touch their hearts and bring them closer to you. We pray for those who are injured or ill or sick or afflicted with any disease, that you would help them through the healing process. And we pray for those who have recently lost loved ones, that you will come to their need in their time of grieving. And as always, we pray in Jesus' name, amen.
Welcome to The Forum, your way to keep up with state and community leaders, experts, and local business leaders. This is your chance to hear from and talk to people that affect your life right here in Rim Country. You can express your opinions by calling 474-2427. And remember, the comments and opinions of guests and callers are not necessarily the opinions of KMOG. Welcome to Rim Country 4.
Good morning and welcome to The Forum. It's about 4 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Charlie Seraph, and thanks so much for being with us this morning. We have a very important program. If you have friends who live in the town of Payson and are interested in what's going on in the town of Payson, I advise you to give them a ring, tell them to turn on the radio, and pay attention to what they hear today. I want to thank our sponsors before we begin: Smart Systems, the Dana Law Group, Banner Medical Center, Pinnacle Propane, and the Owens Law Firm. And welcome to the microphone, members of Transparent Payson, Steve Otto and Jeffrey Ale, and Tim Lasota, who is the attorney who represents Transparent Payson. Jeff, I'm going to start with you, and would you just give us a kind of a thumbnail sketch of what Transparent Payson is and why it is?
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Transparent Payson is a direct result of town leadership about 5-6 years ago brought to the town a proposed hockey rink to use Rumsey Park land in conjunction with a prep school. The funding of that adventure was never disclosed. We drafted and advocated on behalf of two propositions, 401 and 402, which address use of public lands and the financing mechanism to utilize what's known as a backstop or a shotgun feature. The propositions were passed. They've been on the books for about 5 years. Recently, town council attempted to repeal the propositions as they view them as an impediment.
All right. And Steve Otto, good morning.
Good morning, Charlie.
Your involvement with Transparent Payson, why did you get involved with the group, and how long have you been associated with them, and what's your motivation?
My motivation is simply to further the goals that I set forth when I was an unsuccessful candidate for council. I want the town of Payson and Payson town government to be responsive and open with the citizens of Payson. Since I moved here 11 years ago, every time there's a proposition, or not a proposition, but every time there's a project that comes up, there's lots of hand waving, lots of, well, we're going to do it, and we're going to have a public private partnership, we're going to do this, but the numbers are always short, and the details are always cloudy. So I got involved with Transparent Payson because enough is enough.
All right. And Tim Lasota, welcome. Welcome to Payson. How are you today?
I'm good, Charlie. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I understand that you are an Arizona native, lived here all your life, yes?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to law school?
Well, I went to University of Colorado for undergrad, and I went to ASU for law school. And I've lived in the Phoenix area my whole life, but obviously I practice law around the state. Very few places in Arizona I've not been to at one time or another. And Payson's certainly on my list of places I like. It's a great day here today, for sure.
Yeah, beautiful. A little bit cooler here than it is in the valley at home, right? So your involvement with Transparent Payson, when were you retained? Why were you retained? You were there in the beginning, yes, to help draft the original propositions or put some input into it?
I was originally retained in 2021 when the town council was talking about repealing these two propositions. I sent a letter to the council basically saying, look, you can't repeal these propositions. It would be illegal to do so. If you do so, we're going to sue you on behalf of Transparent Payson. That letter worked the first time. Now come 2023 and the town council started making the same rumblings, I sent a similar letter saying, I'm going to sue you for Transparent Payson if you repeal these ballot measures. For whatever reason, it didn't work this time, and they repealed them. So we were true to our word, and we have sued the town of Payson to invalidate their purported repeal of these two ballot measures passed by the citizens of Payson.
We watched the arguments very carefully when the contract town attorney was making a pitch to repeal 401 and 402, and his language was very specific. He said the ballot propositions in and of themselves are not illegal, but if the town council were to act on the ballot propositions, that would be illegal. And for someone who didn't go to law school but speaks English, that doesn't really make sense. So could you explain in legal terms how something can be legal, but if you do it, it becomes illegal?
Well, I guess maybe it's the difference between something that is per se illegal on its face versus illegal as applied. But I certainly disagree with the town attorney on all fronts. I don't think it's illegal to as applied. I don't think it's illegal on its face. I think they should have kept these things on the books and they should have adhered to them. And obviously that's what our lawsuit's about. But I don't understand that kind of logic either. And I did graduate from law school, and it escapes me a little bit, I have to admit.
Jeffrey, when the original letter was sent, when the town first started talking about the repeal of 401 and 402, and you sent the letter, I remember talking to you shortly after that, and you said, they're not going to quit. They're going to come back, and we're going to have this thing adjudicated in court at some point.
It's been very clear from the onset that the town does not appreciate citizen involvement. That's a long conversation, but that's kind of the take on it. They've attempted, in 2001, the argument made by the town was that we didn't have the authority to draft or enact the propositions. They modified that position. Now the argument is that they're illegal if they're applied. The town does not want the propositions. It limits their ability to spend money, which was the whole notion behind the propositions. So just for clarification, Transparent Payson as a group, we have no issue if the town wants to build a recreation center or an activity center or anything like that. What we desperately want is clarity in the finance. If the town sets about indebting the citizens, then the citizens need to be aware. So if they elect to pass a general obligation bond and the citizens agree for the purpose of a recreation center or any project, 100% we're on board. So it's just, we're a thorn in their side at this point.
One of the words or a couple of words in the I think it's in 402, but you correct me if it's in 401, but I think it's in 402, it throws out the threshold of $1 million. So that's been interpreted as saying the town can't spend $1 million without having a ballot measure. But that isn't the intent, and in fact, it's not the language of the propositions.
It is clearly not the intent. The intent of the $1,000...
Million dollars,
I'm sorry. The intent is that if there is a financing mechanism for a long-term debt that has a threshold over $1 million and it indebts the citizens as a general obligation bond would, then it needs to go to the public. So what happens is that it used to be there were two types of bonds. A general obligation bond clearly goes to the public. A revenue bond does not require public input. There was a hybrid that was developed, and the hybrid is essentially a revenue bond with a backstop feature. Now, that hybrid is considered a revenue bond for the purpose of the town enacting it. The numbers that are used for the revenue bond to support the bond are almost secondary or irrelevant because it has the backstop of a general obligation bond.
So in layman's terms, when you have a municipal bond, you can put that out to the public, and Joe or Mary Citizen can go ahead and purchase those bonds. They can invest in that project, and they're pretty comfortable with those types of municipal investments because they're backed by the town, by the government entity. But in the instance that you're talking about, you'd put it out to the general public and say, hey, everybody, we're trying to raise $20 million or whatever the number is, and we'd like you to buy these bonds. And maybe they don't, that's not fully subscribed, so they only raise $3 or $4 million, and then they have a shortfall of whatever, $16-17 million, and then they say, okay, well, since it wasn't fully subscribed, this backstop measure that you're talking about, we're going to take that now back to the people, and we're going to encumber the people through taxation to make up the difference. Is that a fair representation or not?
No, it's not.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% familiar with the underwriting process. When a bond is issued, it goes through the underwriters. The underwriters fund it, and then the underwriters sell the bond subscription.
Okay.
So the funding mechanism is not the question. What is the question is the financing mechanism for that funding. A number of years ago, it was very common to see general obligation bonds on the ballot. Do we need a new fire station? Yes, let's have a general obligation bond. You rarely see general obligation bond issues on the ballot. Instead, what's happened is that they'll create a public-private partnership. There will be a pro forma anticipation of the cash flow that will generate the, quote, revenue to support the bond finance or the issuance of the bond. In the bond language, there is a backstop that if the public-private partnership fails, then the town is on the hook. So it's that backstop that we're concerned about, because that is technically a general obligation bond issued without the benefit of a vote of a general obligation bond.
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Good morning, everyone. This is Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just wanted to explain or clarify. Someone made a statement earlier saying that Proposition 402 doesn't limit the city on spending. Or actually, it does limit the city on spending, but it doesn't really limit their spending. It limits their spending freely. Everything needs to go to vote then. That is what the proposition does. And that's the reason why those idiots in the council don't like it.
Yeah, and one of the arguments is that and when we talk about spending $1 million, and it came up that there were two fire engines that were purchased a couple years ago, and the total of the between the two fire engines was over $1 million. It was money that was budgeted for capital expenditure. It was in the budget. They spent the money, and they said, oh, here we are. Now we're in violation of the propositions. But in fact, it wasn't in violation of the propositions because it didn't involve the issuance of a bond.
So the propositions do not limit the town from spending $1 million. What it is the debt incurring. So right. I think the town budget is approximately $50 million in round numbers.
I think it's about 58 something.
Okay, so clearly the town has no problem spending $58 million. We have not inhibited that in any fashion. Now,
right.
If the town seeks funding that has the backstop feature, then it's a general obligation bond.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Richard.
That's the good thing about it.
Yep.
Power to you guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. 17 minutes after 9 o'clock, you're listening to The Forum. Our guests this morning are Tim Lasota, who is an attorney representing Transparent Payson. Jeffrey Ale and Steve Otto are here to represent Transparent Payson. And we're talking about the lawsuit which has been filed against the town. What is, Tim, what's the desired outcome? If you are successful, what happens then?
Well, we're asking that these two propositions be reinstated and that the town essentially be ordered to adhere to them. We think that the purported repeal of them is just what a lawyer would call void ab initio, just void from the start, and that the bottom line is these things need to go back on the books. We need a court to recognize that these things are still law and that they must be followed by the town. One interesting thing from earlier is the notion that there's something illegal about the actual substance of these propositions or the application of these propositions. You know, if that's the case, then somebody could challenge these in court. But the old saying is talk is cheap, and here is a perfect example. We had got a lot of talk about, you know, these things are illegal or the application's illegal, but nobody has actually challenged that in court. We obviously disagree. Bottom line, the council does not have the power to repeal voter-approved measures.
What court are you filed in when you filed this lawsuit? Where did you file it?
Gila County Superior Court.
And are they in a position to be able to rule on it, or would they have to kick it up to a higher level?
Well, no, they could rule on it as it is, given just the nature of this matter. It has been sent to a judge in Apache County, and that judge will be hearing this matter. I expected that. It's something that, you know, involving the town of Payson, the Superior Court judges here apparently felt there was a conflict or appearance of one. So that's fairly common, and that's what's happened.
One of the legal arguments that was made, again, to the council is that the 401 and 402 are not specifically detailed in the Arizona Constitution. Those types of measures are not written about as as part of the law, and so therefore, since they aren't specifically mentioned, then they become illegal. They don't count because they're not covered by anything in the Arizona Constitution specifically. Where does that go?
I don't think that goes anywhere, Charlie. I mean, the bottom line is the Arizona Constitution, and this was extremely important to our founders, right? It sort of delayed statehood because the president at that time didn't like these very strong ballot measure rights that the founders of our state included in the Constitution, the Arizona Constitution. And one of those is the right to initiative, and that means that and it was reserved specifically. It's still in the Arizona Constitution, has been since statehood. At the local level, town level, city level, the citizens have the right to pass their own laws, assuming it, you know, the only, if this conflicted with state law, that would be different. But the notion that citizens aren't permitted to do certain things under the Arizona Constitution is just wrong. I mean, it would have to conflict with some other higher legal principle. But the voters of a town, with that in mind, the voters of the town can do anything that doesn't run afoul of sort of some higher law.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Good morning. This is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. I think it's something else is important to note on this, that the lawsuit against the town does not address the language of the propositions. Whether you agree or disagree with the language of the propositions, that's not what the lawsuit is about. The lawsuit is about whether or not the town has the legal right to remove citizen initiatives once they're enacted. Whether you agree or disagree with the propositions, most people, I think, would disagree with the fact that the town has overruled the rights of the people, with 60% of the people voting at that time to enact these propositions. It's just the arrogance of it all. And people need to understand that. Whether you agree or disagree or understand the propositions or confused by it, That's not the issue here. The issue here is the town did not have the legal right to remove the will of the people.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, you don't even have to support Propositions 401 or 402 to take issue with what the town did. I think that a lot of people, regardless of how they feel about the underlying laws, don't like the idea of the politicians coming in and telling the electorate that they know more and that they know better and that the electorate should sort of be seen and pay taxes but not be heard.
Having watched the proceeding, I'm going to question whether or not it was the politicians who've made this decision or whether it was the administrative component of the town of Payson that made the decision, because it was strongly pushed by the town manager and the town attorney. And in watching the faces of the people on the council on the night that they voted on it, it didn't appear that they were very familiar with the language, and therefore they didn't ask any questions when the arguments came forward. And the basic argument is it's illegal to go to the citizens of the town and ask them how to spend their money. I'm going to boil it all the way down. That's what they're saying. It's illegal to go to the citizens and ask them how to spend their tax dollars. And that, if someone gave that argument to me, I would go, well, what law is being violated if it's illegal to do that? But no one on the council asked that question. In fact, none of them asked questions. They just sat and nodded their heads and listened as we got a word salad from the contract town attorney, who made up these things like, well, they're not illegal in and of themselves, but if the town were to enact them, then that would be an illegal act because it's not called for in the Constitution. It just was. So is it the politicians? Is it the politicians? Who's running the town of Payson? Who made that decision?
Go
ahead, Steve.
So Transparent Payson is a group. We have no animosity towards any town councilor. I believe that they're being given bad advice. Does the town attorney have an obligation to provide them with full and correct information? I don't know. Are they receiving all viewpoints on this issue from watching the proceedings? I don't believe they were. So,
well, they heard from 50 people who are some large number of people who stood there and said, no, you can't do this. This is not right. This is not what we want.
Well, and again, they might place, as council members, they might place more weight on the information presented by town legal. When I seek out opinion for any legal matter, I want that opinion to be true and correct. I'm not interested in biased information. I think the suit against the town is an opportunity for the council members to perhaps have the information that they were not provided before. So in that regard, it's a great thing. It's unfortunate that the council members are not receiving 100% true and accurate information, in my estimation. We have no control over that. That's something that needs to be addressed by town council. And hopefully, if town council members realize that, perhaps they'll take action.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Hey, good morning, Charlie. This is Bob. How are you guys doing this morning?
Everybody good.
Excellent. Would this not be similar at the national level to our Congress and our Senate and our executive branches trying to eliminate the Bill of Rights out of the 27 amendments of the Constitution? Would it not be similar? And if it is similar, the only way to amend the Constitution, I believe, is to call a constitutional convention of the states, I believe. What do you think?
There's a lot of discussion in town about allowing our elected representatives, council members, to represent the people. It's sometimes in American politics, it's a little confusing. America as a nation is a constitutional federal republic. Now, the town of Payson is a representative democracy. The propositions are actually a direct democracy issue. So it's not analogous to a federal issue. We acted within our rights under the Arizona Constitution. We passed the propositions, and they are now law in the town of Payson. The argument that the councilors have some divine right to overturn that based on their election is incorrect, because if you recognize that their election was valid, then you also have to recognize that the election to pass the propositions was likewise valid. So I believe a direct democracy issue likely has greater weight than does a representative democracy action.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for your call. If you'd like to participate in the discussion this morning, the number is 474-2427, 28 minutes after 9 o'clock. We'll pause and take care of some business, and we'll have more with our guest from Transparent Payson right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Hi, Charlie. It's Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up the fact that it's not just that they voted to repeal it. It's the way that they did it, I think, is even more curious, through an emergency. I mean, that just kind of quashes anything or any remedy that the people have to be able to, fight this. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts. And
yeah, you took my next question, Kim, but that was a good. That's a good one. I wrote down emergency. So we'll ask the panel here. What was the emergency? How the town declared an emergency, but to those of us who live in the town, it was an invisible emergency. We didn't see what the emergency was. What was it?
Oh, so the stated emergency was the rising interest rates. Now, if you even marginally paid attention to what was going on in the economy, you would have known a year ago that interest rates were going to rise. The writing was on the wall. I anticipate that people that are paid salary should at least marginally pay attention. I don't understand how an interest rate can equate to an emergency. It makes no sense.
Well, I'm going to ask Tim, as an attorney, if there is a state of an emergency because of interest rates, isn't that state of emergency, doesn't it apply to other things? And wouldn't it give the town and the town government other authority because of rising, whatever the reason is, but once an emergency is declared, wouldn't they have the right to do other things that they wouldn't normally do?
Well, Charlie, I'm afraid you might be giving town council and town staff ideas here. And that thought may have crossed their mind, but I think the bottom line here is this is not an emergency. It sounds like a bad joke. I mean, what's your emergency? Interest rates? I mean, come on. It's not an emergency. It's just a way for them to try to keep the people from voting on this. Again, they say that, you know, government always says they want public input, but a lot of times they don't. They really want to just govern as they choose. So here, if they're, you know, this emergency clause, which is also something we've challenged in the lawsuit specifically, but it prevented the or purports to prevent the public from circulating a referendum petition against the actions of the town council. It's no emergency. It's just their way of excluding the public again.
It was a loophole. It's something that is called for. So if there is an emergency, if there was a fire emergency or a plane crash emergency or a freeway closure emergency, if there was a real emergency that affected the safety and lives of the people who live here, then the government is entitled to take extreme measures to protect the safety of the community, right?
That's right. And unfortunately, that is exactly why they have this power. But unfortunately, it's often abused by politicians, by governmental entities who sort of use it as a blank check to get out of the checks and balances that are part of our system. And I think that's exactly what happened here. You know, they were going to come up with a reason. I mean, it could have been rising interest rates. It could have been because today's Wednesday instead of Thursday. I mean, it was, you know, there was going to be a reason. I think they picked the least bad choice, but it's pretty transparent that this was no emergency. Charlie, you described true emergencies, and this is hardly one of them.
If it is an emergency, because they called it an emergency and they said it was an emergency, have they issued the bonds? Because the interest rates are going up again next month, according to what we're hearing. Inflation's still out of control. Last month's numbers were really bad. We're hearing that the Fed may raise interest rates another 0.25%. So if time is of the essence because of an emergency, then you would think that those bonds have already been drawn up and have been taken to underwriters and that's in process. Do we know if that's true or not?
I haven't heard of any bonds being issued. I haven't seen any projects proposed that would require bonds. I mean, town manager just gave a discussion on the local government investment pool at the last council meeting that Councilwoman Shinstock asked for. And according to town figures, town has $49 million in that investment pool, cash. And town manager did mention that, well, $33 million is restricted use. Well, the restrictions were put on by a town council. Restrictions can be removed by a town council. But that money's sitting there. That money is available without any bonds. And Jolynn Shinstock, to her credit, actually asked town manager pointed questions two council meetings ago because a Payson citizen brought that up and said, well, why can't we connect the dots, the financial dots? Because you're saying that, you know, we don't have money, we need to raise taxes, we need to do this, but then here's this investment pool. You know, how do you reconcile? And that's when Councilwoman Shinstock asked town manager, wait a minute, is that true? Is that a fact? And a document on Payson letterhead was given to the council at the last meeting that showed interest from the LGIP, the amount restricted, the amount available, and the balance as of March 31.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Good morning, Charlie. This is Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Just a couple of quick questions. If they prevail in the lawsuit, will they be able to recover their legal fees? And if they prevail, are they going to ask for sanctions? I'll hang up and listen to the answer. Thank you.
Good questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We have asked for legal fees. I think they would be mandatory, actually, if we do prevail, and we expect to prevail. Meaning, I think the court, I think under Arizona law, there would have to be an award of legal fees. I mean, we'll have to see how the litigation goes. I don't anticipate asking for sanctions.
What about the appeal? Do you have any estimation, and this is the unasked question, but do you have any estimation of what your lawsuit will cost the taxpayers of Payson as the town defends it? Because our contract attorney, that situation, they don't do litigation. So somebody else, the town is going to have to hire another lawyer, not the one who made the arguments initially, to come and speak on behalf of the town to say the council acted justly and here's why and all that, make their arguments. So they have to pay that person. Do you have any guesstimate of what that might cost?
Well, Charlie, since everybody agrees on the facts here, that removes what's normally a very costly part of litigation, which is factual development, discovery, depositions. So, I mean, they will probably hire someone. I don't know if it'll be Pierce Coleman, but it shouldn't cost more than $30,000 to defend this. It's purely a question of law. I mean, at least through the Superior Court level. So, I mean, you see some pretty hefty bills from attorneys, but I think bottom line is I think that's kind of on the high end through Superior Court. And that's where a lot of the arguments will be developed. A lot of what will be done on appeal, if there is an appeal, it will be sort of a regurgitation of the arguments that have been made at the Superior Court level.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
This is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
the evening that the vote was taken, there was somebody got up and discussed the fact that the attorney and the town council were basically pretending they had the right to do this. And the discussion I've heard thus far this morning, it's coinciding with that they really didn't have the right to do this. And what that person was mentioning was the United States Code, Title 18, Section 241 and 242, which means the depriving the living, breathing people that of Payson of their rights. And the minute the town council voted on it, it then became a conspiracy to deprive us of our rights. And if I'm hearing correctly, please tell me I am or I'm not, but if I'm hearing correctly, pretty much it's all under the color of law of what they did, which then would elicit that title and those two codes. Am I right? Am I wrong? Or where am I missing this?
Well, I think that probably pertains to federal law, the United States Code. But I think the bottom line is, I think this is covered by state law. And sort of to summarize our legal position, the Voter Protection Act was added to the Arizona Constitution in 1998 by the Arizona voters. We think it applies to municipal elections just in itself. But if to the extent any further support for that is necessary, it's found in the Payson Town Code, which says explicitly that all laws related to initiative referenda at the state level apply at the local town of Payson level. So, I mean, I think it's a extremely strong case. Frankly, I don't know how that the town of Payson is gonna say that provision and collectively those two provisions, one state law, one town of Payson law, applies. I don't think they're going to be able to sort of try to get into the substance of the propositions and defend that way. I think that's an entirely separate question than their ability to repeal something that the voters have passed.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, because it just struck me again that they're faking it till they make it.
Appreciate your call this morning, Scott. Thanks for your questions. Is there a liability for the town council, for members of the council, for their acting on what may or may not have been truthful information provided to them?
Charlie, I think the town's liability is probably limited to legal bills. I think that's about it. I think there's potential political liability because people don't like the politicians telling them that their voice doesn't count for anything.
That would be an understatement, wouldn't it? 18 minutes until 10 o'clock. You're listening to The Forum here on KMOG. If you're on the line, be patient. We'll get to your question right after this. We're going to take another break for some business, and we'll have more. We're visiting with Transparent Payson this morning, Jeffrey Hale and Steve Otto, and Tim Lasota, who is the attorney representing them in their lawsuit against the town of Payson. Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Hi, this is Don.
Hi, Don.
Hi, I have a question. So along with attorney fees, is there any way to ask for, say, to help the town council with their, I'm going to say crooked ways, to ask for a forensic audit to help them learn not to turn on the people and their will so that this won't happen again, and we can actually follow the money trail and see what they have been doing to the public here in Payson? Is that something you can ask the Superior Court for? And then I'll let you go. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate your call.
Actually, no, that's not part of our lawsuit, and I don't think there's a legal basis to do that. I think that's going to have to come from the town council. If they want to have a forensic audit, I think they would have to do it or order it themselves. I think that that's not to say that there's not a robust role for the public and some very effective avenues for the public to gather this information. We have a strong public records law in the state. The courts have been pretty good about upholding it and making sure it's got validity and efficacy. So I would anybody who wants to who wants information, I would say avail yourself of the Arizona Public Records Law, and all this financial information is public record and it has to be turned over.
Steve, I'm going to turn to you with a question now. As someone who has filed under the open records laws to ask for information, how forthcoming is the town when it comes to releasing specific financial records?
It's like pulling teeth. They will parse words until you hit exactly the right word. We were looking for who committed the town of Payson to the ADA settlement with the Department of Justice. And who signed, who committed, who did this? And nothing came forward. I mean, we had a big gap in our information quest.
Yeah, I'd like to hear.
And then finally moved one word at a time, and a year later they had to provide under a FOIA that town manager directed Justin Pierce to tell the Department of Justice that we will accept Key Bridge Foundation as the mediator. And it took a year to get the right word to get them to provide that document. But they did provide it, and I do have it, and we know who committed the town to an $11 million settlement.
And do we know what the status of that is? How much time does the town have to work off the $11 million settlement?
It's beyond my lifetime. I think for the last thing that was identified in the assessment of the town, they have 40 years from the date of the agreement to get that resolved. So that building, those buildings will be torn down and gone before they get it fixed.
On the issue of the, we go by the name Transparent Payson, so I hesitate to use that word. On the issue of transparency, the town has a long history of intimidating people. One of our board members recently posted a meme on Facebook, received a threatening letter. That was responded to. It was an ill-advised letter. I'll let Tim here address any of the legal consequences of it. Another example would be the town modified the code from the Arizona Constitution regarding the referendum and initiative process. They changed a couple of words in it. It's actually a higher burden in the town of Payson than it is at the state level on a percentage basis. In my opinion, the town is more than happy to take my tax money, but they don't want my input. They don't want Steve's input, and they don't want anybody else's input. They would be happier if we just paid our taxes and had no input. So they make it very challenging on the FOIA requests, the intimidation, things along those lines.
One of the questions that we've gotten on the program, and we have a community at the bottom of the hill who has a very nice community, Fountain Hills, and their annual budget is about $12 million less than the town of Payson's budget. And we've been asked the question, why? What do we have to show for the $12 million more than they spend in Fountain Hills? And people come back and say, well, they don't have exactly, you know, the same kind of services, and we have to serve outlying areas and other things like that. But it seems like for a small town, a pretty big difference in total expenditures. And yet, if we saw they're repaving and digging up Main Street and refacing all the buildings, or, you know, building new parks, or we've got a new town hall building being constructed, or a new police station, or whatever, then I think people would understand. Oh, well, there's a lot of progress. But people have asked, what is the progress that's happening here?
The progress since I've been here is, well, Dutch Brothers has a place to get drive-through coffee, and They build a new car wash on Main Street.
We're getting a new drive-through marijuana dispensary.
And home delivery.
And home delivery.
Yeah, because they said they had to pass that because people could order their marijuana from Sholo and have it delivered. So,
and that would cut into our tax base.
Yeah, so we had to have home delivery here.
Okay.
One of the things, a number of years back, I ran for town council, and the question was posed to me, what do you think the town council does well? And I'm somewhat flip by nature, so I said they issue proclamations and they're great at spending money on studies. I don't know how much money has been spent on studies after study after study. Main Street is a great example. I don't know how many times you need to revisit that and have an additional study to come up with a plan. At some point, execution is important. Not too long ago, there was a move to privatize the Payson Fire Department as an expenditure measure. Well, if that was in fact the case, then it seems to me that we should have put that out to bid with other private vendors. I forget the name of the outfit that services Scottsdale, but they're a national company that provides private fire services. So if that was the goal, to reduce the costs by privatizing the fire department, then we should have explored all options. There was one option explored.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Hello, this is Frederick.
Hey, Frederick.
How you doing?
Good.
I have two comments. One comment and one question. So I've been on town council before in a small town of 25,000 people, and the town administrators and the town employees really are what this group might call the problem. The elected employees, which you call town council, they're really your elected employees, they just kowtow to these town administrators. And then, you know, you have the town administrator there, that's their job, they make a lot of money, and they get these new people. And then don't forget that the town council are just moms and dads, sisters and brothers. So, you know, even if they're kind of professional politicians, they're still just in for a little while. And then my last thing and my question, then I'll let you go, is this sounds like a great cause. Is there any way to donate or provide any sort of like $25, $50 to this Transparent Payson organization?
Thank you, Frederick. Appreciate your call this morning. Jeffrey?
There is, absolutely. We do not want to minimize the number of volunteers and the number of man hours that it took to place these propositions on the ballot. There were a lot of people involved. I am the spokesperson, but there were a lot of people involved. At this point, there are two methods to be impactful. One is to donate, transparentpayson.org. There are donate buttons all over the place on that page. The other is to contact us directly. We're more than happy to pick up a cash donation, a check donation, anything like that. The second very effective thing is if you are part of a group and you wish us to come and discuss the issues and provide some insight, we're more than happy to attend those meetings. Any donation helps. We are keeping very close to our vest our current bank account. It's not required to be disclosed until July. I believe that the town would evaluate our strength if we released those numbers. So we continue our fundraising effort. We have targets in mind. We have not yet met those targets.
So it's spell out the words, transparentpayson.org.
Correct.
All right. We're going to take another little break here. If you're on the line, be patient. We'll get to you right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
This is Greg again, Charlie. I'm sorry to bother you with another call, but Steve brought up an issue that makes me have a question. Did the town manager authorize $11 million, or did the town council ever get the vote on that? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Good question.
No idea on the move. I know that there was no mention of the ADA settlement until 2021. But the acceptance of mediation happened in 2020, and I sent 5 pages to the ombudsman at the Attorney General's office and have not heard anything back.
Yeah, if it were approved by the town council, it would have had to have been on an agenda, and it would have been noticed, presumably.
Can't find that through FOIA. it doesn't show.
Tim, you mentioned at the beginning of the program that you traveled throughout the state of Arizona for your work, and you're familiar with a lot of different governmental agencies, and you work in this genre, if you will. Is what we have in what's been discussed here so far, is that fairly common across the state? I mean, do you have other city councils or town councils that are declaring states of emergency to pass emergency measures that are tied to interest rates and stuff like that? I mean, is this the new America or the new Arizona that we're living in?
Well, Charlie, this is the only specific instance, that you've got that they're repealing the voter passed initiatives and they're calling it an emergency. I've never seen that. Some of the things we see, the ignoring of public input, sort of the putting aside of members of the public, the over-reliance on staff. I mean, those are the unwillingness to comply with the law with regards to public records. I mean, those are unfortunately fairly common themes throughout government.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Good morning, Charlie. Jeff.
Hi, Charlie. Jeff.
Hi, guys. Nice seeing you again today. Hey, this $11 million EDA thing, what you're saying is just not true. I mean, the town's been working on a 40-year plan since 2018. All towns in Arizona got hit in 1990 with this ADA compliance that's going to cost our town $11,475,000. In January, the Justice Department approved our plan. It's a 40-year plan. Mr. Davies' complaint had nothing to do with that. That mediation actually resulted in the town putting some handrails by the boat ramp in June to meet those needs. But the town's been working on a 40-year plan to address this need for quite some time, and they got it passed through the Justice Department, and we have many grants that'll supplement that, but there's no lawsuit. It's just that's what's going to cost our town to be ADA compliant due to the law changes in 1990. And Sheila's staff's been working hard on this since 2018. And yes, they did pass it. I was at that meeting. But it's a long-term plan to meet the state and federal requirements that we're required to do. And part of the bus program that the town took over, we got large grants to address many of those needs. But there's no way our town can become compliant overnight. But the Department of Justice has approved our 40-year plan.
So what you're saying, Jeff, if I can ask, what you're saying is that every town across America has a 40-year plan and was contacted by the Department of Justice and has to set aside funds for ADA compliance?
Every town in America hit with big bills to comply with ADA compliance. I don't think there's any municipality, even Phoenix, that has enough funds to do that all at once. And the Department of Justice demanded of every town in Arizona that they present them a plan that they will come compliant at some point. And our town is in compliance, and the Department of Justice approved our plan. But
the plan is in compliance. The town is not, right?
It can't. Well, no.
Yeah.
As long as they follow the plan, they're in compliance.
Okay. All right. Nope. I appreciate your call. We're running out of time here. We're short. And Steve, you want to...
Well, it just seems to me that when you look at the paperwork and it says Davies versus Town of Payson, I don't get those kind of notices at home unless I'm being sued. So call it what you will. I already mentioned that it was a 40-year settlement. You know, the paperwork speaks for itself. I've got two notebooks with me that have every scrap of paper that Payson has touched on this matter.
Tim, I'm going to come back to you and say, in your experience and traveled around the state, is every community under Department of Justice dictate to for a violation of ADA standards?
I wouldn't say that everyone's under dictate for violation, but it does apply everywhere. So, but, you know, getting back to what you just mentioned about our town's cities like Payson. One of the, I think, one of the most disappointing developments is this letter now from the town attorney to one of our board members, basically demanding that he cease and desist using this parody meme. And if he doesn't do that, they're threatening him with a lawsuit. So I think that that is one thing I haven't seen very often is that type of sort of, I don't even know what I'd call it, but it's very disturbing that people are exercising their rights and then they're getting cease and desist letters from the town's attorney.
Would you call that intimidation?
I view it as such. Yes, absolutely I do. Real quick on the ADA. ADA has been on the books for a number of years, a couple of decades, if not longer. It's very unfortunate that the town requires Department of Justice intervention to adhere to ADA compliance regulations. That is not new to the building code world. That retrofitting is not new in any way, shape, or form in construction. That, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, a 40-year plan to comply, I suspect some of the people that can benefit the most from ADA compliance will no longer be with us. That is shameful.
Including the individual who filed the suit?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, there are a lot more questions. If people are looking for more information, as you mentioned earlier in the program, Jeffrey, they can go to transparentpayson.org. If they want to participate, if they have an organization, they can reach out to you. There's contact information there. They can send you an email or whatnot. Get in touch with you, and your group will be happy to sit down with them and discuss the issue, the lawsuit in particular, but anything else that has to do with the things that we've talked about here today. And Tim Lasota, thanks so much for coming up. Appreciate you making the drive. We heard that there's a large load heading south on 87 that slowed up traffic considerably after yesterday's fire, so it may take you a while to get back home if you're heading that way. If you're heading up to higher elevations, you'll have a smooth trip and a nice drive.
Well, maybe I'll go through Camp Verde, take the General Crook Trail.
There you go. We're going to take one more call here this morning just because it came in and we're being patient with him. Good morning. Welcome to the forum. Who's on the line?
Oh, my name is Mike. Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
You know, I was just wondering, listening to all the, you know, back and forth and nothing gets done and everything. And I've been here for, I think, God, almost 24 years. And I think you guys are right. I ain't seen a lot happen in this town. And I was just wondering why they don't do a lot of stuff for the kids, you know, like swimming pools or activities, after school stuff for the kids. And it's always like you have to belong to a certain organization or you just can't go. It's just not for everybody. I mean, there's kids that don't join organizations. They don't do this and don't do that. So they feel left out. And I just feel like there's not a enough for the kids in this town. I see a lot of bickering back and forth for the older people, but what's going on for the younger generation here?
Well, Mike, I was going to mention this on a program. Thanks for your call. I was going to mention this on last Friday, and I forgot, but the town of Payson is going to put on a summer camp this year for kids. It costs $50 per kid, and they're putting it on at exactly the same time, the same days, and the same hours as Payson Community Kids holds their annual summer camp. So it's almost as if it's in competition. And as everybody probably knows, or those who've been in the community a long time, Susie Tubbs of Akian, who has been associated with the Payson Community Kids for about 23 years and is the lone dissenting voice on a lot of votes at the town council. So she's her association with PCK on one hand, and on the other hand, the town is going to do something for kids. They're going to put on a summer camp in direct competition to the free summer camp that's put on by the charitable organization PCK. So they're probably not happy to hear me say that at the town. I'm not discouraging anybody from paying $50 to send their kid to summer camp in the town, but it's part and parcel of what we've been talking about here today. I think there seems to be a disconnect.
Agreed.
Yeah, there is. The short answer on why nothing is done for the kids don't vote. And again, back to my flip self. Thank you very much, Charlie, for having us on. I appreciate it, and we appreciate the opportunity to provide an alternate viewpoint from the town and reach members of the community.
Thank you for being here. Keep us posted on developments as this thing moves through the courts, and we'll look forward to your return visit at some point in the future.
Thank you, Charlie.
You bet.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you for listening this morning. Join us again tomorrow morning. We'll be here at 9 o'clock at KMOG Payson, where it is now 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. Thank you.